Hey everybody, it's Matt Karastasi. This is the second edition of Buzz Bands, my podcast. It has a name now. I give it a name. It's called Buzz Bands, you know, buzzy bands, drinking, getting buzzed. Get it? Sorry, it's the best I can come up with. Anyway, on today's show, we have Cold Blood Club from New York. I went through hell to put this damn thing together. The card that I had the audio on was corrupted, so I had to use about 25 different recovery programs and basically recover it piece by piece by piece and then edit it all back together and then cut it down again. It was terrible. It took about 4 hours and it should have taken about 20 minutes. So anyway, that sucked, but the interview, I think it was pretty good. Tom got wasted. So, you know, I suppose that's a good thing for a show called Buzz Bands. That's kind of the thing you want to see. Anyway, I'll just go right into the show because you don't want to hear me talk. You want to hear them talk. I'll see you on the other side.
I want you guys to introduce yourselves. That way everybody knows whose voice is who, because I feel like that may be a problem.
I think you'll be able to pick me out.
Fair enough. All right, go.
Okay. The low, hushed, rushed tones. hi, my name is Hillary Davis, and I'm the violinist in Cold Blood Club.
Ow, I'm Kendra Jones, and I'm one of the lead vocalists in Cold Blood Club.
Hi, I'm Tom Stewart, and I play guitar and the occasional keyboard with Cold Blood Club.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now that we got that out of the way, My first question is to Tom. What happened to the Patriots, buddy?
Dun, dun, dun.
It's very simple. I mean, I was screaming at the TV the whole time, and we can make this really simple. I think the defense overachieved, and the game plan was too cool for school. They should have run the ball a lot more. They had four running backs that were all great running backs. They didn't control the clock. They couldn't convert on the third downs the way they had. It's like all of a sudden they had lost confidence in their ground game, and their ground game opens up their short passing game. And without it, they're throwing the ball downfield at every third down conversion. It didn't make any goddamn sense to me.
Can I be honest with you?
What's that?
I was actually hoping for you to kind of like yell and rant, but that was almost too good of an answer.
No, I'm serious though.
That was Sunday night.
Like my friend and I were watching the game, and we were like,
yeah,
we know
I've seen
we
you.
Know that, we
when
know
you're watching Pats games, and that's not the kind of response you.
It was such a slow slide this time around that I could see what was going wrong while it was going wrong. Me and my buddy that were watching the game often talk about it, and we were just both totally aware they were like they're just making the wrong play calls. The talent was there, and that was like it was one of the worst called. I'm a big Josh McDaniels fan, their offensive coordinator. He had the, in my mind, the worst game of his life in terms of play calling.
Okay, well, so that goes to my next sort of line of question. Actually, I probably should have done it the other way around. But
you're trying to get me riled up. I get it.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to start.
No,
off
no, the everybody bang. Wants to see Freakazoid Tom.
All right. Or here.
So
you're trying to tell me that London Calling is an overrated record right now to get my stirrups up. Right?
So,
I get it.
I guess we should now go to where everybody's from because that would explain the first question.
Well,
so
I'm from
Tom,
New England. It's quite
okay,
clear. Although I've been in New York City for a long time, enough to the fact that it's beginning to be now that I'm in my 30th year and I'm realizing that in just a handful of more years, I'll have lived in New York City as long as I grew up where I grew up. It's pretty weird when you think about that. And I think that, Matt, you can identify with that too. New York City's my town, and yet New England is where I grew up. And it's so I grew up in like one of them like looks like a snow globe village in New England. Literally, I don't know if I ever told you about this, and I don't use the word literally lightly because I know it's a bugaboo. But literally, literally, the town that I grew up in was the town where the nursery rhyme of Mary Had a Little Lamb transpired.
You have historical proof.
Yes,
of this.
We have a lamb statue in the middle of town, and Mary Sawyer's house.
Wait, no, Mary, just the lamb. It's just like
No, Mary Sawyer's house is one mile away from where the historical school
that
resided.
Shit.
Wow. All happened shit. Within about 3 miles
so
of my house.
So is there a Mary Had a Little Lamb tour?
Well, I mean, it's very simple. It's like they have in the town common, we have the little statue. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, yeah, Mary Sawyer, the Sawyers were one of the original families in town. Mm-hmm. And they lived about 3/4 mile from where the schoolhouse was, and they had a little farm. It's very simple. I'm giving you a sense of where I come
your
from.
Your Mary's Little Lamb story.
No, I'm saying like, that's the kind of thing. But
that's
when you
the longest answer to the where are you from question I've ever heard.
No, I understand that, and you're welcome to cut it down. I'm just saying like the more important thing is when you grow up in New England, you grow up around all these like weird little histories that you never thought would like in the rest of them. Like if you come from Europe. There's always little history that surrounds you, you know?
You get for starting the town.
Hey, let's talk about Stuart Road. Did you know there's a road in his town named after his family?
Yeah, absolutely the case. That's how long we were there. So it's very weird for me to now to feel like a New Yorker.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Enough said.
Okay.
Kendra?
I am from... I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas. I traveled around a bit when I was little. I went... from Little Rock to Memphis to Texas. I actually spent some time in Jersey City for some weird-ass reason.
That is weird.
It's a little weird. And my mom was a traveling nurse, so she got
jobs. Traveling nurse?
Yeah, they
That's
have
That's a thing?
It's a thing. She went to hospitals all over the country just because... It's like being a temp cross-country, kind of. Yeah,
it's
we
like
were
a migrant
Jersey
worker, but for,
and...
like, surgery?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, we were in Jersey and Nebraska.
It's making it sound like your sisters in your life was like paper moving. Like you were like, hey, what can we do to jazz these people out of a couple dollars?
I wish that we had thought of that. We just mostly got depressed. That's all. Yeah.
We were raised sad.
Shut up. And the last place I was in Dallas, Texas, and then I came to New York. So
I've been
here
to Dallas
for about 11 years.
Horrible place.
Anybody's ever taken a flight has gone to the
nice.
DFW, right?
It's
I mean, it's weird because the side roads there are like 15 lanes.
Yeah.
It would be like Rivington. Imagine Rivington if it was 12 lanes.
Yeah.
And for those
but
of you
no
listening at home,
it actually has
Rivington,
less traffic than Rivington.
Yeah.
But they just built all the streets.
Rivington is a small concourse in the middle of the heartbeat of the Lower East Side for you listening at home.
No,
right,
but
so
have
this
you
is
ever
why
been
it's funny.
To like Dallas? Like...
I'm not
going to
explain
ridiculous.
Rivington to people.
I'm going to explain Rivington to people. You know, it's a miracle on Ludlow
really
Street.
That's really ambitious
you know?
That you, right. you think
Wait,
there's
you...
going to be national listeners. Okay.
Yeah, but you've lived here for a while. You should talk about that.
I've lived here for 11 years.
Okay. When is that all? Where?
I think it's been 11 years.
Where?
I arrived here a month before 9/11.
Oh, me too. That's weird.
Yeah. That was like, I was coming back from French class. And
no, I literally got here exact know. Same time then.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Freaky, yeah.
That's cool.
I moved here a month before 9/11.
Oh, shit.
How long ago is that? You never compared
when
notes?
Have we talked about that? I don't know.
Your
it's because you know
stories?
How people are like, oh, I know where I was when Kennedy was shot. No, I know where I was
Well,
I mean,
that's valid. I lived here during 9/11. Mm-hmm. I've been here for a year.
I think
9/11
separates the
you know?
Long-term New Yorkers from the us newbies.
Yeah. I still kind of
so
feel like
you're defining yourself as sole newbie, Hillary.
Oh. Yeah.
So go ahead.
I'm representing the Midwest contingent and the new New Yorker contingent. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And when people hear Minnesota, they think Fargo. It's not. Minneapolis, St. Paul is actually a little tiny mecca of culture in the Midwest. We have more theaters per capita than New York because there's like 5 theaters, on one
what?
Block. Yeah, we have more theaters per capita.
It's weird.
I know.
Statistic.
And
well, then
home of
New York State, not New York City.
Oh.
No, then New York City. For
oh.
The New York City?
I believe so.
Per capita means that they have like 10 people there and
exactly.
they have 3
exactly.
theaters. All right, so they win. All right.
Oh.
It's
we play
it's
play
what we call a dubious
well.
Statistic.
I understand.
We are full of them in Minnesota.
Okay.
I'm
just blowing up her spot, man. I know that you get it.
Right? So, yeah, home of Bob Dylan, home of Prince. So
look, I can go the other way. Like
musical,
Worcester, I grew up outside
of
right outside of Worcester. We have one of the top 10 art museums in the country.
See?
Yeah, right.
So do we, Walker, the Walker Center.
Worcester Art Museum.
Anyway,
well,
so
I'm from Vineland, New Jersey, and we invented the term moron.
So
everybody else
you
can just
win.
Eat it.
You win.
All right, how about that?
Anyway, no.
I believe you guys invented the term hangover from my experiences in Vineland, New Jersey. All right.
No, Minneapolis-St. Paul is actually very liberal, very cultured little town, but gets really, really cold in the winter, really gross and hot in the summer, and I got sick of everybody.
Gross and
hot's
what,
that,
68 degrees?
Yeah, like
what's that?
80, yeah. And I get sick of everyone saying, like, I can't keep up with you, blah, blah, you're too fast, you're too, blah, you talk too fast, blah, blah. I was like, well, maybe New York City can keep up with me. So I moved here about 3 years ago, but I used to come here for
a while. But
then
all of your friends from Minnesota decided that they had to come find you because you were apparently the life's blood.
Yep.
I know. Everyone
so I lured
a lot
of people here.
She was like the Christopher
Columbus
of Minnesota to New York traffic, apparently.
Every time I even meet somebody from Minnesota. Oh,
like every other person I meet in New York City is apparently from Minnesota via Hillary at this point.
Pretty much.
Okay, so... Cold Blood Club.
Oh, why are we here? What are we doing?
No. So, what are we doing? The name.
Yeah, what the hell is up with that name? Why did we settle?
Let's
I
talk
don't
about
even
that.
Remember why
okay.
we settled on that name.
Because we didn't want to be the Vainglories, which is PS copyrighted.
Well, actually, my real question is...
What's your real question?
How many people do you have to murder to get into the Cold Blood
Club? This is not going to devolve into the... Raccoon Fighter story. Actually, it's a very cold night out tonight, and this is Cold Blood Club weather. It's about 15 degrees outside. So basically, we can go into more of the origins of the band. I'm sure you have some more prepared things, but basically, you know,
translation. I'm just gonna talk now, and you just deal with.
No, I'm saying like
let me touch on those points before you.
What? No, I'm saying it's hard to talk about. It's hard to talk about the origin of the name without understanding that the band began as a bit of a lark between Kendra and I, right? Like, I would consider Kendra and me and Brad to be original members of the band, but like Kendra and I being like kind of. Band founders, we were talking for a long time. Kendra had known my old band Radio America, seen us around for a very long time. We've been friends for a very long time, and we had like a joke about starting a band. So when I found that I had a lot of time on my hands and I wanted to start a group, I basically just said, Kendra, I'll write a couple songs, let's do it.
And I thought he was full of shit. I was just like, we're drinking, it's fine.
No, that's
whatever.
Me when I say I'm going to start a band.
Yeah.
When does Tom ever not do something he says he's going to do?
I know, I've learned that. Oh, I've learned it.
Watch out.
But like back in the day.
But basically, like we had a handful, I had a handful of band ideas then for, I didn't really think about it until we got Brad convinced to be part of it. Mm. And then Jesse was on page, and I went and saw Jesse play music with his friend Angela, and he and Angela were Angela was a singer-songwriter, and both Jesse and Shin, who's now our drummer, were playing with Angela, and she called her performance Angela Jane. You should check it out; it's really good stuff. But we were dishing between a few ideas. I'd always wanted to call a band the Vainglories, and I had a couple other great ideas I thought at the time for band names like At Risk Youth and a few ideas, just like stuff that kind of took the piss out of us. But really, Angela deserves all the credit. I actually said this in an interview before. She deserves all the credit for the band because I threw out a few band names and I was standing at the bar at, it was Spike Hill, which is on, right on the, if you don't know it, it's like right on the drag on Bedford, right at the Bedford stop on North 7th.
In the heart of Williamsburg.
Yeah, and it's and they were playing a free gig.
There is no heart in Williamsburg.
And she was like, "What are you guys talking about?" And I was like, "Well, Jesse's maybe interested in joining Kendra's and my new project." And she goes, "Well, what's the project called?" And I was like, "Actually, it's funny you should ask. That's what we were just talking about." She said, "What are the ideas you got?" And I rattled off a handful of ideas. To be honest with you, a few of them I don't remember for band titles, and. I had seen Angela about 15 minutes earlier, and we were talking about that thing where you place like the chalkboard in front of a club, and you see the band titles listed on it. Mm-hmm. And she immediately referenced that, and she goes, "Tom, what was the last thing you said?" I said, "Cold Blood Club." She goes, "If I saw that on the chalkboard out in front of the club, and it was a free gig, I'd walk in because I want to know what that band was about."
And it's a fun... as I design all the posters for the band and whatnot, it's a those are great words. Those are fun words to like, design. They look cool. There's a lot of repetition.
Yeah, so repeating, so like, it's like it's three cool, strong words, words. But Angela was just basically like, you, like I would stop and see that band, and I didn't see the virtue of it. It was just one idea, and it was just because we were working out some stuff the week before, and I was like, oh, Cold Blood Club. And we were freezing cold and despondent. So I just thought that people wouldn't take it. I just thought it was good because people wouldn't take it that serious, because that's the big thing for us. We want to put on a party. Mm-hmm. And then when Angela was like, I would go and check that group out, I was sold right there. I was like, that's the thing that's going to keep us honest, because we're not going to be that serious about it.
But I think what's great too, it's kind of a tongue twister. So people have to repeat it. They're like, Cold Blood Club. You have to kind of stop and say
you
it.
You definitely always times. Get a reaction. Mm-hmm. It's people, not like, oh, my band's name or the Charlie in the Mix and like, eh, whatever. But you all people always are like, Cold Blood Club. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
And there's it sounds a bit sinister too. There's a little darkness to it.
It's there's some weird duality where it's you could take it either way.
Sinister
or silly.
There was kind of the aspect though of us all having like played in other groups and failed. Kendra's the newbie, brings life to the whole project. But there was that kind of thing that meant something to me, which was that we had all given our all to these other projects, and we were kind of reforming as best we could, and for almost a magnificent seven type go around, and we were the Cold Blood Club. You know, instead of just being a band, we were trying to, you know, rally all the types in town and see if we could take them down. I believe he has other questions as well.
Oh, I have lots of other questions. Well, I don't have questions. I just have notes that I may turn into a question. I may not.
Evan Williams has more questions than you, man. apparently.
So like when you guys started out, I mean, it was more or less Tom diddling with electronic stuff, right? I mean,
yeah, that's absolutely the case.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
that
you
makes
wrote
it sound unintentional, though. I think. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, but I mean that it, in a way, it almost was.
No, it was. It was a very dark time. It's funny.
It sounds like the beginning of a James Joyce novel.
It was a dark time. It's absolutely the case, though.
Okay, so.
Like, if I'm reduced to screwing around with laptops, it's a dark time.
Hey, man, that's the future of music. I know. That's what they tell me.
Well, it's a bit punk rock, though, because you can do whatever you want at your own disposal.
Right, okay, exactly. But, like, the point being is that you basically started putting these songs together by yourself. I mean, the first, at least, I mean, how many songs did you put together?
Well, the idea, I had a half a dozen songs.
Okay.
Like fragments of songs, some of which we're still working out now for our, you know, we have an EP out, and some of those original songs to start putting together, we're still working on now for the LP. We've just kind of finished writing the LP, and we're in good spot to record whenever the time dictates now. But it's very important for me to emphasize that I was messing around with some things, and I didn't know at all what to do. My old band, who I dearly loved, which was Radio America, we had kind of by circumstances split up, and I was messing around with a lot of things at home, and for the first time I tried recording with my own home gear and with the digital implements that I had, but I didn't have an excuse to build anything out of it. And that's why I say Kendra is by all means the co-founder of the Cold Blood Club, because I basically was like, I'm working on some concepts at home. Kendra, remember how we used to always joke around about how we were going to start a band? Right?
I was terrified.
You were the muse.
I was so terrified.
Well, like, Kendra, you could call her a muse, but she was also more of a co-contributor than you think in a likely story, because I was working on a bunch of song concepts, and I basically said to Kendra, I'm doing this. We always used to joke about it, but are you in? And this is about 2 years to now when this was going down.
Yeah, pretty much.
So this is 2013, and we're talking 2011. Boom, right now. My band, Radio America, had basically fallen apart in the fall of 2010. And I was like, I've got some ideas. How would you like to apply them? And I was working me and a laptop, me and my guitars, whatever I had at home. And I approached Kendra and I was like, do you really want to do it? Are we going to do this? What would you, and I had been really burnt out by playing live and being the lead singer in a band. And I said, Kendra, I want to build a band around you and a male voice. And I'm not sure I want to be that male voice. So what would you like to sing about? And then she gave me a handful of topics, and I'll never, I remember we were hanging out one night, she wrote down on like a bar napkin, like things that she wanted to sing about. And one was like Hope and Regret in New York, and like the cold, and then like White Boys. And literally those songs became Ladies and Gentlemen, Steady, and White Boys. Because I took them as like points of departure to like make these things I've been screwing around with in the songs.
So you're the writer of White Boys, huh?
Yeah. Would you believe that?
I do believe it, actually.
No, but
actually, I would believe Puerto Rican Boys more so. But, you know.
No,
why, you think it's my type?
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying, yes.
I think that's what I'm saying. Aww. No, I think with most bands, people assume that the singers are the ones who are writing the lyrics. And I think it's really interesting in this band, Tom writes all the lyrics. And he's essentially almost...
Wait,
creating...
so you literally wrote the lyrics?
He writes all
the
lyrics.
Oh my God.
He writes everything. Seriously?
And he had me in mind, I guess. he was like, what would Kendra say?
It's almost like writing a play. Like, he had Kendra Brad in mind.
Wow, you just saved his ass with that one.
Well, the thing, Tom is more of a playwright than a
the thing about
gay
that
man.
Song, the thing about that song
no,
is,
hey, listen, do what
I
you
think
want.
At least the way that it's been sort of passed on to me and the way that I'm supposed to Lord? The way that
that's
I'm supposed
Sandy Claus
to perform it is...
That's going
to
be the recurring theme of
the whole thing. Like the ghost of the machine.
What did you say? It was like our sort of like... if we could be so bold. It was our sort of answer to Brown Sugar. So it's like this... If we could be so bold. I know it's Rolling Stones.
We did talk about this a lot. I didn't write this in a vacuum. We talked about
right,
it a lot.
So yeah. It's sort of like me sort of just being this... dominating, like, power bitch, and my whole thing is that I want me some fucking white ass, and you're gonna give it to me, or I'm gonna throttle you, kind of a thing, you know? Because look, I'm just saying.
So you go out and rape white guys? Is that the thing?
It's not that. It's just that, look, like, I know.
You just said you throttle.
Women in general are like, you know, there's that, you know, that pretty Puerto Rican girl, and there's a girl with that nice ass, and I like a Russian bitch. You know? People do that. So what I'm saying is, I have a thing for white dudes, and nobody talks about that. Nobody
specific types
that.
Of white dudes, or
I no. have my thing.
Are you like into Irish guys or
yeah, they're
Swedes?
Cute enough. The power play.
Fucking German, honey. I got it.
I know you did,
Matt.
I know the German.
You don't have to tell me if she hadn't explained it to me the way that
Schnitzel.
she's articulating to you now. I wouldn't have found it a fertile ground to write a pop song around them, but I thought it was interesting that like these British rockers had kind of come into this rock and roll genre eons ago and just started saying like, you know, we're gonna come into this thing and like Brown Sugar, you taste so good, like they're making a plaything of this black art form, right? And what I thought was interesting is, like, if we could reverse the paradigm, like, I hadn't thought of it unless Kendra had, you know, considered and submitted it, like, as, like, a concept that we should write about. I was like, well, that's awesome. Wouldn't a fucking 6 foot tall, badass black chick singing about how she wants to just call up a bunch of white boys to the front of the stage be the antidote to Mick Jagger saying brown sugar, how come you taste so good? And like, why can't we turn that on its head? I think we were pretty successful in articulating it right. And I think it's really funny. Occasionally we'll play that song and people will come up, and unfortunately disproportionately to Kendra, and be like, oh, what's this thing that you're doing? And like, we're basically like, do you understand we turn it on its head? She's in charge.
She's in charge. It's a silly, fun song, but at the end of the day, my whole thing about it is, because look, this has been me for as long as I can remember. I'm just saying, it's been me for as long as I can remember.
A little bit, I just like that it was written by a white guy.
Yeah, that's
because that's wishful really, thinking.
Yeah,
if you ask me.
But no one. I have never heard anyone actually sort of just say and be completely comfortable with the fact that they have a thing for white guys. White guys are everywhere. White people are everywhere. And they're just sort of, nobody has ever zeroed in on them and said, you, I'm going to make you an object. I'm going to fucking dominate you and make you sort of I'm going to use you to please myself. You do it with women all the time. You do it with black women all the time. It happens, but nobody's ever made a white dude the fucking plaything. And I love that. And people can talk shit about this song all they want.
And if you give me just a second, all I did was listen to what you just listened to for the last 30 seconds, right? And try to distill that into a verse that rhymed.
Like, what about Justin Bieber, though?
What I'm trying to say is to suggest that, like, like, Kendra's got a full co-write on that song, and it's for a reason. Like, all I did was justify, or no, sorry, not justify at all. There's no justification for it. Like, I'm not trying to rectify it at all. All I did was boil that down into meter, what Kendra just said, because it was always a very, I thought, interesting point. But the bigger point is, we have Brad and Kendra singing songs for Cold Blood Club, and I take a great deal of glee out of writing songs for the both of them. And Bradley's not here, but it also confers, like, I really love writing for the both of them. I enjoy making sentiments sort of, I enjoy making sentiments something that you can sing to and something that you can convey to an audience. That's all I can say.
And I think that both of you have, Brad and Kendra, have distinct personalities that come across on stage. And I think you do a good job of reflecting that in the lyrics. But I think you guys are also really good foils for each other. Where Brad's the guy that's like, the joke originally was, oh yeah, he's like a foot shorter and a decade older, which is not true, but kind of sometimes kind of, if you're wearing your platform shoes, and he's the guy that's like, you know, just bouncing around on stage.
I think those are both things
and,
you can like actually test.
He's the guy, you know, jumping around on stage and shaking his tambourine and getting all into it. And
Bradley's my sugar daddy. He's like my papa.
And no, the chemistry, I think, sugar daddy and papa
are two completely different things.
No.
The chemistry is very delicate. Like, I will sing a couple of songs here or there, but without Kendra or Brad and the whole atmosphere of the group, it can kind of go to pot. Like very seldom will I have a song I want to bring to the band and say, hey guys, I just think maybe because of the key or maybe because of the sentiment, I'm going to take this one. Because most of the time, what I'm doing, whether you guys are explicitly saying I would like to sing something about this or that or not, I'm writing with, or not even just writing, but finishing with either Bradley or Kendra in mind.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
What?
What?
You just learned
that?
Really?
You know that? Yes, you do.
No,
Whatever.
I know that.
I think my favorite part of the show is when the band has a conversation.
And then...
Where they're like, I didn't know that. Honestly, that happened last time, and I was like,
well, oh, like, yeah.
Well, how often do you sit around and talk about,
I don't know,
why would we put this band
in? I think that, like, Ladies and Gentlemen is our theme song, and the whole point of, in a way, of that, like, that song existed as a justification
to...
We are
ladies.
Like, the concept behind that was to speak to point of views vocally, mm-hmm, about life in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, like, when it's cold out like it is tonight, mm-hmm, when we're all trying to get someplace decent,
so
you know?
I would just like to point out that I'm well past buzzed.
Well, then you're not quite there yet, are you?
Oh, no,
I think she's there.
So, yes, what's your next question?
But I'm saying, by all means, like, if the band started out with that song in my mind, trying to articulate all of these things.
Mm-hmm. And, well, yeah, I knew
and,
that.
And we're trying to move within that paradigm that it kind of constructed for us, that's all.
All right.
So then...
We've had drinks. This is definitely buzz.
Well, you asked
this
us
the way
to drink.
It's supposed to go.
This is
you
us. Actually,
this point.
Is us every week after band practice. Except we're sitting at Anchored Inn.
Are you still not drinking, by the way?
She's drinking a little bit.
Tummy problems.
Don't bring it on.
What's your next
Black Karen Mother
I'm the only one holding this. Be thankful. I'm the only one holding this thing together.
Where's your next
I'll keep us on track.
They're whispering to each other right now.
You're not allowed to
for
whisper
the
on a podcast.
I don't even know
You're
what the hell he's talking
about. All right. So, this W Hotel Fashion Week thing.
Oh, yeah.
How was that? What was that all about? Let's talk
about
that for
that
a bit.
That just kind of landed in our laps.
How?
That was like...
Explain.
A friend of mine that I used to be neighbors with, Greg... Who I used to, I would go to his house and we'd have parties and sit around and watch movies and shit, and he was really cool. I think he is a producer. And he was working with this small time company that does all this video production shit and motion graphics and stuff like that. And like they were doing this thing for like Fashion Week.
It was a series of videos promoting Fashion Week.
Promoting Fashion Week, and they were having something at the W Hotel, and I missed my cell phone. And,
You can't turn your phone off for this?
I really thought I did.
We had six spots, by the way. It all came out to six spots.
Yeah, it did. And he just sort of, like, emailed me randomly, and he was like, hey, you're in a band, right? Like, we're looking for this band to, like, do the soundtrack for these promotional videos that we're doing. Sorry, I'm gonna turn it off. From these promotional videos that we're doing, and I heard your song, and I think it's cool. I'm gonna suggest it to the guys, and I was like, okay, awesome. And then I told them about it, and
we used them. The tape.
I told them about it, and we all agreed that it was cool, and they just used our shit, and it was all over the fucking website and whatever else they did with it, and it was really nice.
Did you guys get to go to the actual show or anything?
What did we do? Didn't we have a party? We went to a party.
We went to their new establishment party.
You know why? Because we could have.
We could have, definitely, but we were like fucked up.
I was a total chicken shit because I was just like, I don't know how to ask people, like, you used our song. Do we get like something? Can we get like a pass? Can we like do this? I didn't know how to do that. And they wanted to do that, and I should have done that, but I was just at the time. At the time, everything was so new, and I'm still so green. I was just like, I don't know. I don't think
we're talking about.
You've been here for 11 years.
Not in a band.
Kendra, can I ask you something for a second? We're literally talking about a thing that transpired a year and a month ago. I mean, like,
we were barely a band. We were like
the one thing I want.
Use your song.
The one
thing. It was amazing.
It was amazing shit. What I want to say is like the one thing about how I felt so amazing about that spot.
Did
we
get paid for it?
not just because it got a couple bucks that I could put towards our eventual. like lot in life, like letting us like record more things and do more things. Mm-hmm. But I was saying is like it was a really lovely
affirmation of what the band was doing at that point in time. Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, it gave us that, like, we had just kind of gotten together.
Like, literally, the band just, as you know it, had just gelled.
They added me and then Shin, our drummer. So we had just become like a full band with drums. And I think that gave
and then
us
we
this extra little
got
boost.
That
it was
thing.
Great.
Why did you kick your cousin out of the band? That's a good question.
He left.
Aww. Oh, Matley. There was nothing that would
warm my heart. So Gabe's,
what are you doing
Tom's cousin Gabe Stewart.
No,
Stewart used to play the movie. Yeah,
no, don't stop right now.
Edit that
so
out.
Close.
No, you don't have to edit that at all. I just said Matley. Like, you sing that, it's like the most heartfelt thing in my life.
We loved.
You tapped
I would love my friend.
So did he quit the band? Am I wrong?
He had to.
So
yeah.
Gabe
well,
quit
then
the
I'm
band.
Wrong, and you have nothing to feel guilty about.
What I was trying to tell you was, like, there's nothing that would make me happier in life as if Gabe were the other keyboard player in Cobra Club. Like,
fair
seriously?
Enough.
Like,
we dueling keyboards, Dean and Gabe.
He's just a great person.
Yeah.
I just love
No, I'm saying he's a great personality. He's a great dude. He's a great musician.
He's awesome.
He's the... Honestly, like, my friend, my cousin Gabriel is my favorite person. Like, and I always wanted him in my band because he's my favorite person.
The rest of us are crying right now because we're not Tom's favorite people.
I love the death out of the rest of you, but I'm like, I've known this kid since he was 2, mm-hmm. and he's my favorite person on earth. All right, so I'm really sorry.
Tom is opening up because
he's in touch with his feelings.
So he wasn't kicked out of the band.
No,
he wasn't kicked out of the band. No, like Gabriel.
Get your facts straight before you're interviewing.
Hey, listen. I don't have any facts. I'm just
Gabriel didn't leave the band.
Like
we all asked that he stopped, and like waited a second and said, maybe we can work this out for you. You know.
Yes. Next question.
But.
All
right. I feel like Rainbow right. Fighter held it together. I'm falling.
We're too big of an enterprise. We're a bullshit.
We're
bullshit. Drunks,
so,
you are amateurs.
This has got nothing to do with being like drinking or not. I'm saying like we're talking about like a shit ton of.
It has nothing to do with drinking.
Shut up, Tom. What is it? Yes.
Tom, do you want to talk about how we met? And how all this came about?
Ooh, that's a good
story. I didn't think we were going to ask that. That's
going way back.
How we're Winnie the Pooh, how every member of the band. We can talk about.
Well, like, if I'm
actually
Winnie the Pooh, he's Christopher Robbins.
No, you're Christopher Robbins.
No, he is in this thing.
No, he's totally Eeyore.
Charles is Winnie the Pooh.
You're so Eeyore.
Even Jesse's
I don't know
too.
What the hell you're talking about right now.
Okay. Shin is Rabbit, you're Pooh.
All right, shut the fuck up.
Talk about how you
met.
Okay, go.
And Brad is the West.
So, me and Tom know each other because we worked together at Tower Records, the one in, what, Lincoln
Center? It was the Lincoln Center at Tower Records. Very briefly.
That one, right? So, we worked there. I was actually only there for about a month, but he was...
Was it kind of like the Empire Records? Like, was it really that fun to work at
it was terrible. I
just picture it like a bunch
of... All right, I will say this.
That
Matt... Maddie had the worst experience possible because I worked at 3 Tower Records locations.
Yeah, you had the Massachusetts money coming in.
And
here's the deal. If you worked in Tower Records in Massachusetts and transferred to New York,
you kept your
pay rate.
Yeah.
I was working there for like $7.25 an hour or something like that, and he was making like $10.
Yeah.
Which both suck horribly.
But
sucks one
more.
Sucks a little bit more.
$3 an hour more.
And that's why I only lasted a month, and I was like, F you guys.
But what was amazing though is I will never forego the fact that we, like, that's how I got to be mates with Matt.
Mates.
Because we're all in
school.
We're in Oxford.
Hey, mate. Good day, mate.
It is a bit Ockbridgian, though, right?
Right? I just love the fact that you're so drunk right now. I just love it. I'm sorry. I'm gonna make fun of you.
He's a bit Ockbridgian right now. Yes. Like that's how we roll the whole thing out.
Like, can you just speak in a British accent the rest of it?
No, please, God, oh God, don't do it. No,
they won't want me to do it. Off, so I won't fucking do it. No. No, they don't want me fucking do it. So I won't do it.
No, God, no, Hillary.
No, it's a complete travesty.
I swear to God, Hillary is fired. Off, and I'm shutting this whole thing down if you do it.
Please.
No, I would just say it for a second.
Please, okay. Don't.
Right.
So Tower Records, and then is there more to that story?
No. Is there?
I don't know. I'll talk about how I met the band because it's a very typical Tom story. I've come to find out. So it was I'm a DJ with a little party called Transmission NYC. That's on hiatus at the moment, but it was my very first night of DJing in New York City ever at 200 Orchard, which used to be Orchard Bar, Lower East Side, popular bar. And I was there hanging out with my friends and Ryan Spoto from Day Roar, and the DJ didn't show up. So we were just hanging out, talking about we were supposed to DJ like the following week. And the DJ didn't show up Saturday night, Lower East Side. And he's like, hey, it was me and my DJ partner, Di, can you ladies just stay and keep playing music? And we were already a little drunk, and like, what? Okay, we don't know what we're doing. And unbeknownst to me, that night, there was a bachelor party at 200 Orchard as well. And so I played a Libertine song, my favorite Libertine song, Can't Stand Me Now. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, dude at the bar starts pumping his fist and singing at me, and then fitting both the stuff.
You know that's fucking tough.
And I was like, yeah, sweet, somebody likes, and this was the, like, somebody likes the music we're playing. Awesome. Like, that's what I want. It was kind of a dull night up to that point. I'm like, you're getting the party started. This is awesome. And then you came up, and
can I explain what was happening that night?
Yeah.
I was at the bachelor party. I was at the bachelor party show of my best friend, yes. Andrew.
Yes. And so then, you came up and talked, and Di was mad at me because I was blabbing away. I was like, I remember you were like, so, yeah, hey, I'm Pam Stewart, and I have a band. I have this band called Radio America, and yeah, I DJ too, and you know what song always gets them going? And was it you that said to do that?
I had a good suggestion that night.
I had
a good suggestion that night.
Which, do you remember what it was?
No.
I think you said to play the, and now I'm blanking out, the George Harrison song.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
And so,
myself on you.
I got my mindset on you. I'm like, we don't have that. We should play that. We did play it the next time. But then, after that, we just kept running into each other, too. We ended up having a lot of mutual friends. And so
Manly, how does this whole thing resolve itself?
Are you all right, man? You should drink some water.
I'm fine.
Yeah, have some here.
You got stuff on you.
There's no beer on you. Have some water.
You okay? Look,
where did I get inarticulate? I don't understand.
Maybe
it's not that you're inarticulate, but you're definitely drunk sounding. Which is fine, because it's called Buzz Bands, and we're supposed to be drunk.
You sound good. You're fine.
I'm all right. I mean, I'm definitely, like,
you're working,
tipsy.
Working to keep it together.
I'm keeping it together, but you need to drink some water. You all right?
Is there water?
You're going to pass out, are you?
I'm not going to pass out.
Drink some fucking water, dude.
Thanks for coming through.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun.
Thanks
I hope
for
you had
having
a good time.
Us. Oh
was
my
it
God.
Fun?
Let,
yeah, good.
So all right.
Fun. I'm Great. Sorry. I'm sorry. Thank Matt. You. Matt Lee. Let her
Matt
do what she's saying.
Did you just call me Matt Lee?
He's been calling you Matt Lee the whole time.
I have to tell you,
you
man.
Matt Lee
like,
for fucking
like
five
your
weeks.
Your premise
man.
For the show is awesome.
Yeah.
And then, but then you gotta.
No, that's what happens.
Yeah.
That's the fun of it.
All right.
Okay, so this has been Hillary, Tom, and Kendra from Cold Blood Club.
Awesomeness.
Be sure to check out our EP, Headlines and Firefights. And our website is coldbloodclub.com, which our friend Henry from Aloud is almost done designing and putting up.
So, and if you're a white boy, you should come and check us out on Sunday because we're filming a music video at the Paper Box in Williamsburg, 17 Meadow Street, 12 p.m. sharp.
Woo-hoo!
Woo! Okay.
We're done.
Well, that was the show. I hope you had fun. Tom had fun. I had fun. Kendra had fun. I think Hillary had fun, but she wasn't really drinking. Either way, this is, again, the second edition of Buzz Bands. It's on iTunes now, so go check it out. And if you are a booze company of any kind, and you want to get in on this action, we'll be, I'm looking for sponsors. So you can give us some free booze. Only need about a bottle a show. Case of beer a show. Something like that. Easy. And, you know, obviously we'll talk about you on the show. I can mention it right now in this little outro. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep buying rot gut whiskey and cheap beer. Which isn't healthy. But, you know, we do what we can. Stay tuned. Hopefully this show will be weekly. Maybe even twice a week. And that's all I got for now. Go to the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/buzzbands, and that'll help you stay on top of new episodes. Take care.